The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Oh, we're here. Here we are. We're here. You know, just had to recharge the batteries for a second. Sorry about that. Welcome back. Another hour of the Bucket Strategy Investing program gets underway. I'm Johnny Dean, our professor, Rick Plum, here with me from Lucia Capital Group, standing by to answer your money questions. We're going to get right to this hour's strategy session. We got some emails, a bunch of stuff to get to, a lot of topics on the table, and anything else that you want to talk about, well, your emails, your phone calls, those are all coming up. And keep them coming in, by the way. Keep it right here for the best in money information. These are things that you need to know about regarding your money and your money strategies. Some very important stuff to talk about. You can send your emails directly to us at wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link right there near the top of the page. Find your answer, type it in, and we'll get it right here in the studio. If you want to give us a call, we got lines open all of a sudden, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. That's our number right here in the studio. And by the way, you can also get in touch with the Brain Trust off the air if that is your preferred method of communication. You do it through Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. I've said it before, I'll say it again. You need a personalized bucket strategy, one that's designed with your goals, your needs in mind. So call Professor Plum or anyone at Lucia Capital Group. That phone number off the air again, 800-644-1150. You can schedule an appointment with a Brain Trust advisor. Get yourself a bucket strategy, 800-644-1150. That's off the air. On the air, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. I got more to say on this Dalbar thing that we were mentioning yesterday with regard to investor behavior. But this I found really interesting. This might have been out of Motley Fool. It was one of the, originated somewhere there. Some 20 or so retirement stats that they claim will blow you away. I don't know what they mean by that. You're going to find them alarming, humorous, something. But they say there's a serious retirement problem in the U.S., Professor Plum, but it's not too late to do something about it. So, a couple of things that you need to know. Question is, they said, how much do you need to retire comfortably? Well, their answer was, it depends. Good answer.
Finally.
How about that? According to many financial experts, they said, you should plan on needing about 80% of your pre-retirement salary once you retire, including income from Social Security, pensions, and any other savings. First of all, it's kind of a rule of thumb. Is that generally what we subscribe to?
No, it depends on what you really want to have accomplished in your life. A lot of people, higher income people, may need less of a replacement income because they're saving more than 20% of their income right now while they're getting ready to retire. They're spending 7, 8, 10, 15% self-employed for Social Security tax. They're paying for kids. They're paying for this. They're paying for that. And when they retire, they'll have and potentially have less needs. They may not even have a mortgage when they retire, which is part of what your current income is going towards. So 80%, hey, if you can make it work, 80% is probably a better number than what you really need. At least that's what we've seen. I hope I get to 80% of my current income level, you know, because that means that mortgage will be under control.
Sure. Yeah. We hope.
The hope. The kids will be under control. We hope. The savings, I won't need to save anymore, and that is a pretty good size number right now. So, gosh, I'd be able to have one heck of a travel budget with that.
Yeah. So what they're saying here,
but it's a number to shoot for. That's fine.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. At least that's a savings goal.
Until you go through your own goals and determine that it's either too high or too low. And if you determine it's too low, then you need to save more. If you determine that 80% is too high, shoot for it anyway. Because only a couple things are going to happen. Either you have enough money to retire maybe early, or you find out that you were wrong on your assumption, you have enough money to still do it, so you're still okay.
Exactly. So I mentioned some stats. Let's just come up with a couple of these. Tell me what you think of these. First of all, the average American retires at age 63. I'm not sure where they got that.
Probably from Social Security.
Could very well be. They did not source their information, but this off of the Fool. Average American retires at age 63. The average retirement lasts 18 years, which I guess means That's the average lifespan of somebody.
For somebody 63.
Who would retire at, say, age
81,
63.
That sounds about right.
And so they kick off right around age 81. The average retirement lasts 18 years, but many last much longer.
True.
Plus, who knows what the retirement life expectancy will be by the time you get there. Most people would recommend, they said, that you plan on a 30-year retirement. What do you think about that idea?
Well, like the other one, if you plan on a 30-year retirement...
And you live 35?
You'll probably be okay because you've got a long time to look at it and you get used to it. You get into your budget and I think you'll be fine. If you plan for a 15-year and live 20 years, that's a problem. Planning for 30 but living 35, you're probably not going to have much of an issue. And if you don't live 30, you didn't worry about it.
Well, it's no concern to you.
Not anymore.
Yeah. And your heirs, well, you know.
They got some extra money.
That's right. What do they want, you know? Here's what they said, and maybe you can comment on this, Professor Plum. You'll need $1,060,751 in savings. Call it $1.06 million in savings. If you expect to draw $5,000 per month out of your retirement account for 30 years, assuming, they said, 6% annual investment returns and giving you a 2% bump for inflation. Depending on how much income you expect from your savings, they say adjust this amount higher or lower to come up with your retirement number.
Right. If you wanted $10,000, you double the number if you want. Now, that's a 6% distribution with inflation. And there's, you know, because they're saying $5,000 a month, right?
$5,000 a month, and
so that's $60,000 a year.
We're going to call it $1 million.
So it's like a 5.5% distribution.
Yeah, it's close enough to six.
It's a good number. I mean, it's a reasonable number. Now, the reality is they're inflating it by 2% every year. First off, I don't think that the numbers are wrong. I think the way they got it was wrong, but I think the number's a realistic number for most people. If you have $1 million, you're probably going to, you know, a little over $1 million will get you $4,000 or $5,000 a month for the rest of your life, knowing that when you're 90, you don't have to spend as much money. I know they say that healthcare expenses are the driving force and you just end up spending a ton of money. That's going to happen well before 90, but typically what we've seen is that as you get into your later 80s and 90s, you spend less money. You don't need to have that same inflation component on the overall income anymore because you're just not doing as many things. Yes, healthcare is an issue, but it doesn't counteract everything else. So I think that that's a realistic number. Count on $1 million to $1.2 million for every $4,000 to $5,000 a month that you want.
It's a lot of money, Professor Plum. Yeah. I mean, it's $1 million bucks. You know what? Everybody's got to shoot for.
Now we are talking about $4,000 or $5,000 a month you want from your portfolio,
right?
Because if you say, "Wow, I need $5,000 a month to live, and I'm never going to get to $1 million," but you've got Social Security of, you know, $1,800 a month. Your spouse has got Social Security of $1,500 a month. You got almost the $5,000. You got a big chunk of that $5,000 already covered. So we're talking about what's coming from the portfolio.
Yeah, and that's part of the thing that I think, part of the reason I think people get scared, because they'll read, they'll say, how much do I need to retire? They're not necessarily factoring in things like Social Security or perhaps some pensions that you might have. If you're married, you got a spousal Social Security. Some people wind up inheriting some money, you know. There's any number of things that can chip away at that retirement number need.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people also know about the inheritance and count on the inheritance, and they don't get it the same way they think about because mom and dad are still pretty young, and all of a sudden, maybe their health does deteriorate, and they use a lot of their portfolio maintaining their own lifestyle, and you don't inherit as much. And so I really don't like counting on inheritance. I mean, okay, if you're a Rockefeller, yeah, you got a pretty good idea. But if you're the rest of us, you don't really want to count on that unless they're already, you know, basically
right,
in hospice. And then you have a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you said the inflation factor. 2% inflation per year. You're saying that's...
I don't know. That's the hard part because we really don't know what inflation is going to be. It's been less than 2% a year for the last several years.
But do you really need to calculate this from, say, age 65 to age 95? Do you have to keep giving yourself a raise over the course of 30 years?
The reality is your inflation is probably going to be the highest in the early years of retirement and a negative number in your later years of retirement and because you end up spending less over time. But you spend more in the early years. So but it's very difficult and everybody's different. And that's the hard part about inflation. It's a geometric progression up and it starts spending. So if you were looking at $4,000 a month, or they said $5,000.
Yes.
A month, and it was a 2% inflation over 30 years, you know, that means that I can't be right.
Do it again. Reset on the calculator. $5,000.
They're not spending $200,000 a month.
No, probably
30
not,
years no. at 2%. That means that they'd be spending $10,000 a month when they're 95. Most people's budgets don't just double over that 30-year between 65 and 90.
Right.
If it's going to double, it's going to happen between 65 and 70 because they realized that they needed more for retirement than they were originally thinking, or that they're caring for kids or some other things. It doesn't happen at 95.
Yeah, so
not
it
usually.
Could be. It could be that if you're planning on needing that much after 30 years, that maybe you're saying, well, maybe my retirement quote-unquote number is too high.
But you still want to, I still say plan for that million one for every 4,000 you want to take out of the portfolio.
Okay, there you go. And again, the key there is out of the portfolio. 877-PLANNER. You have questions, we have answers. Get on board. Lines open right now. It is Bucket Strategy Investing with the Brain Trust. Good lick there.
I think he's using his fingers.
Ah, this is... Yeah. Oh, that's great. I've heard a couple of different artists do this song. Good stuff. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls and your emails. If you want to give us a call, it is 877-PLANNER, our number here in the studio. And if you want to email us, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Don't forget, I'll just tell you in general, we got some more workshops coming up. If you need to know where the Brain Trust is going to be, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. You wonder if, is Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, they're going to be coming to my city? Well, that could be, there's a very good chance that that's the case. So once again, there's a whole list of schedules there on the, I believe it's the live events tab at wealthed.com. Find out if the Brain Trust is going to be there. I'd say if they're anywhere within 500, 600, 700 miles, you get there, okay? You say that's a long way to go. Well, you know what? Show up and you're going to find out that it really wasn't all that long. It wasn't all that far away. Okay?
And some of the cities are nice destination cities.
Oh, I think so, too. You know,
make a vacation out of it.
Absolutely. Make a vacation out of it. I'll tell you this. You know, we don't wind up going to Minneapolis in, you know, December or January. We don't go to Wisconsin.
Although we did, and we got good crowds there when we did it.
Well, we did, and there's probably a reason for that. There's nothing else going on much. But sure, you know. Not necessarily places like Phoenix or Las Vegas in July or August.
It gets a little warm.
But at the same time, you know, make it a vacation destination and get some great money advice. Once again, check it at wealthed.com. And our emails as well at wealthed.com. I want to get through some of these now and then maybe a little bit later on in the program. Phil in Birmingham, Alabama says, in 2015, my tax attorney set me up to pay quarterly estimated income tax. I paid the final installment January 15th, 2016. My question is, will someone send me a statement that I paid the taxes? If so, when can I expect the statement to arrive?
Unless your accountant, or not accountant, your tax attorney, unless your accountant, your tax attorney is going to do it, I don't know if anybody's going to send you a statement of what you paid on quarterly payments. But if you're a tax attorney set it up, he probably set it up as equal payments over the four quarters. You just paid the last payment in January. You should have paid an equal payment three other times. So it should just be four times what you paid in January.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with that. If the money came out of your account and it was directed to go toward quarterly tax payments.
But I do believe it's your responsibility to keep track of what you paid on quarterly. I don't know of any statement that the IRS is going to send you on, oh, by the way, here's what you sent us already as quarterly payments. They don't have time to do it by the time your last payment was in January. So they're not going to compile all that information and send it back to you before you file your return in February, March, April. So, no, don't rely on them. Rely on you. Just put the number down. Go back and look it up, what you paid in taxes to the IRS on your quarterly payments, and just put it down on the tax return in the right area.
Now, who should be making quarterly tax payments? I know business owners often do, but who should be thinking about that? I mean, is this just...
Well, a lot of retirees will do it where they do not have IRAs, where they have a lot of personal income. Many brokerage companies don't or won't withhold from a personal check that they're sending you. So you have a big portfolio. You know, you've got stocks, bonds, cash, and you're having them send you, $5,000 a month out of the cash and then the dividends are replacing it, interest payments replacing it, however you want to go about setting up your portfolio. If it's a personal account, many brokerage companies won't do any withholding on that. And so you can't withhold enough, so you have to pay quarterlies. But if you have an IRA, most of the time people that have IRAs will do the withholding out of the IRA. So it depends on whether you have the capability withholding from the different sources of income that you have to make it work. And so you can withhold out of your Social Security checks. You can withhold out of pension checks, IRA distributions, 401k distributions. So you can do a lot of ongoing withholding just from those sources. But if for some reason, like in the example I cited before, where the Social Security is, you know, maybe $2,000 a month, $1,000 a month, and they're not doing any withholding from that, and you're getting most of your money from bonds and other things in a personal portfolio, you're probably going to end up paying quarterly taxes.
All right. Again, 877-PLANNER. If you have questions, 877-752-6637. We got some room on the phones right now. Money questions asked and answered right here by the Brain Trust. Judy in Missouri City, Texas. This just came in a little bit ago. Dear Professor Plum, okay, I enjoy listening to you on the radio, especially your explanations. However, I do admit that when it comes to Social Security, I have difficulties. Judy, we fully understand. I hope you can help me with this info so that I can make future decisions. I will be age 62, 3 weeks before the end of April. I remarried in late 2010. My ex has since passed. My current husband is age 68 and started taking SSI, she says, at age 67. His net benefit is $2,450 a month. Net benefit without taxes, or anyway, net benefit $2,450 a month. My last year of earnings was 2011, and Social Security advised in 2014 that my age 66 benefit would be $1,700 a month. I do not plan on returning to the workforce. I would like to maximize the benefits I could receive from Social Security. Questions. First, am I permitted to apply for spousal benefits at my age 62 and allow my benefits to grow until some later time, say age 66?
No.
No is the answer there.
No is the answer. If you apply for a benefit now, you must apply for your own benefit. And only if the spousal benefit is larger would you be able to apply for a spousal benefit. Your spousal benefit will not be larger than your own benefit. If you're applying now, or if you're applying at any time before full retirement age, you're only going to get your benefit.
So, and the reason for that is because his benefit, Professor Plum, is called $2,400 or so. The half of that is about $1,200, $1,225, something like that. And her benefit would be $1,700 a month at age 66, reduced at age 62, of course.
Of course, but so would the spousal benefit. But it's you are not going to ever, because you did not turn 62 before the end of last year, you are not ever going to be able to get a spousal retirement benefit from your current husband, or your late husband for that matter. You're just not going to. You have to apply for your own benefit first in all circumstances, and your benefit's going to be larger than a spousal retirement benefit in any circumstance. You're not going to be able to get a spousal benefit, ever.
Okay, so now, question number two. By the way, if you're on hold, hang on a second. We're going to get to your calls. Charles and Steve, hold on a second. If my husband passes after I apply for my benefits at age 66, can I replace my benefit with a deceased spouse benefit equal to his age 66 benefits? And third, did I miss any opportunities? Thanks, and I will continue to tune in.
Well, I've got bad news, good news for you.
Oh, good.
You apply for your benefit, whether you apply at 62, 66, whenever you apply for it. And then at some later date, you're over full retirement age, your husband dies. That's the first part of the bad news. Second part of the bad news is you will not get his 66 benefit. The good news is you'll get his 67 benefit because he took his benefit at 67.
See, I knew where you were going with this, and that's why I said, oh, good.
The widow's benefit is not based on the full retirement age. It's based on what he was receiving. And the fact that he was receiving a somewhat enhanced benefit because he waited a year to start taking his own benefit. He waited until 67. Your widow's benefit starts off at that higher number and is only reduced if you're under full retirement age. So you get a little bit more than you thought. Not a lot more, but a little bit more.
Correct. Yeah, so that's...
And no, you're not missing anything else.
No, that's it. That's all you're left with. Okay, hang on. As I said, we're going to get back to your phone calls. If you're on hold, we still have one, or is it two? It might be two lines open. 877-PLANET. Charles in Benicia, California, we'll get to you next. And anybody else hanging on. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. Bucket Strategy Investing continues right after this. and digging the jukebox today. That's right. 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. One last thing on Judy's email. You had mentioned, she said, is there anything else that she could do? And if you missed it, don't worry about it. But I'm just, Judy, if you're still listening, if you get a divorce from the current husband.
If you get a divorce from the current husband and your late ex-husband's benefit is
large.
You could then apply for a widow's benefit from your late ex-husband. Because you're single at this point,
right?
Without applying for your own, let your own grow to age 70.
Okay, you asked if there's anything else. Professor Plum
thought
of it.
That's pretty brutal.
Just as we went to a break.
Blaming me. I'm not telling her to get a divorce.
You're the strategy guy here.
Did you hear me bring up divorce during the call with her?
Or not during the email, no. But you brought it up. You said, well, by the way,
John,
if she got a divorce.
Up.
Okay, 877-PLANNER, just going to give you all the information. Charles, Benicia, California is up next. Charles, thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Okay, earlier you were saying that for purposes of Medi-Cal, a required minimum distribution from a traditional IRA was counted as income, but that the IRA balance was not considered an asset for the calculation.
Right.
So my question is, what about a Roth IRA?
And, you know, after I said it, I was thinking about that, but I'd have to look that one up. I know the rules are changing. But the Roth IRA is still an IRA. It just doesn't have a required minimum distribution.
For the owner.
For the owner of it. Obviously,
exactly.
We're not worried about the beneficiary of it because
right.
we know that it's available for a beneficiary at any respect. But I don't know the answer on that. And I'd have to look that up. I know California is trying to find ways to they're holding their look back window at 30, even though the federal government says bring it out to 60. And there's lots of forces going back and forth. They're going broke, so they do need to, you know, raise the look-back window. They need to find ways to raise more assets. But so far, I haven't heard them attacking Roth yet. But I don't have a good answer on that. Sorry, Charles.
What's your situation, Charles, just out of curiosity?
Well, I'm considering that my wife may need long-term care. And so I was concerned about Medi-Cal.
Right.
We both have Roth IRAs and 401ks. So,
is the question of your wife needing a long-term care, is that becoming more of a concern now?
It's becoming more of a concern as she gets older. Yes.
Okay. And now you do not have a long-term care policy or anything like that, right?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Professor Plum, you may have to do a little bit of research on this with regard to the Roth.
I'm trying to, but I just can't do it quick enough.
Well, no, that's okay. That's all right. Charles, I tell you what we can do is maybe see if we can find something during the break coming up in a little bit. Did you have some more questions for us?
Well, I listen every day, so if you address it somewhere down the line, I'll hear it.
Okay, good. Okay. We'll make sure Professor Plum, he'll get
if
on
I can
it.
Get a definitive answer on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Now, if we can't, and you don't hear anything about it in the next day or so, you can give us a call back, Charles, and see if we found anything. I will try to have Professor Plum find what he can during the next break in a few minutes. So
very good.
Thank all right.
You.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Charles. I appreciate you asking that. Let's go back to that again. What we were saying with regard to required minimum distributions, Professor Plum, on, say, a traditional IRA, you were talking about with regard to paying for or having it count as income for Medi-Cal or Medicaid purposes. Yeah.
Eligibility, and it changes from being an asset on the asset side of it for eligibility to an income on the income side when you get to the required.
Your IRA you're talking
IRA,
about.
Traditional IRA. But, you know,
all right, so what
Charles brings up a good question. He's got a Roth. He doesn't have a required minimum distribution. Can the IRA still be an exempt asset from the look-back provision
okay.
or the spend-down provision?
You'll need to explain this one more time, if you don't mind, because we talk about look-back, you're talking about asset, you're talking about income. What are we saying right here?
Well, when it comes to nursing home and convalescent care, home health care, the government wants you to spend your own money to cover your own needs. But they also look at it and say, if you don't have any money, we're not going to, you know, force you to, you know, go into a poorhouse. We're going to cover the need for you. We're going to give you the care once you've spent your own assets. So there's a big decision on what is an asset, what qualifies as an asset that needs to be spent down, and are there assets that don't need to be spent down. Typically a primary residence doesn't need to be included in the asset calculation for spending them down. A car, because we need to be able to get you back and forth to the doctors. So they do have a certain list of exempt assets. that don't need to be spent down to cover your nursing care, your long-term care needs. But personal assets have they're there for you to spend for your own needs. And they say you have to spend them down to about $2,000. An IRA, if you are under required minimum distribution age, is not an exempt asset. You need to spend that down to cover your care. So if you go into a nursing home at a very early age, the IRA is available to you. But if once you get to required minimum distribution age, they look at it more as an income asset. So you have to use it as your income to cover your needs, but they don't look at the asset so much. They just look at the required, whatever you're drawing out as an income, and that's going to be spent up to this, you know, to however much you need to spend to cover your own needs. So a lot of people will drop their distribution to just what's required to come out, the required minimum distribution, to allow the majority of the IRA to continue to grow. Roth IRA, because it is very accessible, because it is, if you're in a nursing home, even if you're under 59 and a half, you're on a disabled side of things, you can get to the money. As long as it's more than 5 years, it's all tax-free, so it's very accessible. And for the owner of the account, there are no required minimum distributions. So it would make financial sense that the states would say, well, that's not an exempt asset because there's not a big hindrance from taxes, there's not any penalties, it's and we can't count it as an income later on because right. there's no required minimum distribution. I don't know whether or not they treat it as an exempt asset. It is still an IRA. It's a Roth IRA instead of a traditional IRA, but it's still an IRA. And so there is some crossover within rules within IRA world. The 60-day rollover crosses over both areas. Contribution limits cross over in both areas. And required minimum distributions for beneficiaries have the same effect. We just have different rules for the owner on the required minimum distribution side. So it's
I have to think that they've addressed this somewhere, that it has to be somewhere in there, because our last caller, Charles, he's not the only one to have
thought of this.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then if you want to make sure you have it, you could always do a conversion and put it into a Roth IRA so that they can't have it.
Oh, so in other words, that's like dodging the...
That may be one way to dodge it, or just another reason to continue with Roth conversions.
Okay, I don't know. But we'll see if we can get on that. It's an excellent question, and we appreciate that. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. As we said, any money question that you have, you're welcome to call right now and ask it. We got Jesse in Arlington, Texas, with a question. If I am 64 years old and I invest a maximum amount in a Roth 401k at work. Oh, I'm sorry. If I am 64 years old and I am investing the maximum amount in the Roth 401k at work, I make over $175,000 yearly. How else can I invest into a retirement program? So apparently he is 64 and putting the max in a Roth 401k at work.
And Jesse, if you are single, that's about it. You don't have any other real options. Nothing with the tax deduction, nothing with tax free. Because if single at 175 or above, you're well over the limits. Now, if you're married and the household income is 175, you have room to do a Roth IRA as well. Because the income limit for a married couple filing a joint return, you start losing your eligibility to contribute to a Roth IRA at $183,000 of income. So you're under that. You're just a little under that. However, if you're married and the 175 is yours and your wife is making more than $8,000 or $9,000, $10,000, you're going to start losing the ability to put money in there. But if you're already maxing out the 401k, the 401k is really the only thing we as an employee have control over for the ability to contribute or not contribute at work. Anything else is subject to the business putting it in. Unless you're the business owner, you don't have any control over that. So if they give you the 401k, but you're already maxing it out, you don't have any availability. You can't even go get another job that has that, another 401k, because the $18,000, $24,000 limit is per person, not per employment situation. So I may have a job, you know, with company A and I make $100,000 and I put in my $18,000 there and I have another job, you know, that makes another $100,000 and I have a 401k, I cannot exceed the maximum that I am allowed to defer out of my total salaries from whatever companies. So the only other thing would be to start a company, create an income, and create an employer-funded retirement plan.
Like a SEP or something.
A SEP, profit sharing plan, defined benefit plan, something of that nature. But that means you gotta go out and, you know, have a whole nother job to be able to create that income, to be able to create that deduction.
Yeah, that may or may not be feasible. Now, if you're putting the $18,000 away,
or 24 for 50
years old, or 24, but whatever it is, you're putting the max away in a 401k. This also extends to what, 403bs and 457 plans?
403bs, but not 457s.
Right. Yeah.
403bs. It does. That's part of the same limit. Get a job with the government, you can do a 457 in addition to the 401k, 403b.
Okay, so go get hired by the government. You don't necessarily
in every case you got to get another job.
You got to get another job, exactly. But you know, that's if you did get another job, even if you don't put in the max, at least it allows you to put something away into a 457 plan. Okay, more coming up. Got some trivia, your phone calls, your emails, all crammed into the next segment of Bucket Strategy Investing. Don't go away. PLANNER, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls till the top of the hour as we do Bucket Strategy Investing every single day. We're here for you, answering your questions. And once again, just a reminder that if you want to meet the Brain Trust, there we're going to be in various cities across the country. You go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Check it out. See where we're going to be. Meet the Brain Trust and get your questions answered in person. Oh, and by the way, learn all about retirement income challenges, strategies. It's all being presented at the 2016 Lucia Capital Group Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. So once again, find out where they're going to be. It's wealthed.com. It's all free. You get to meet the Brain Trust and have a wonderful Saturday morning of fun and information. Once again, wealthed.com. A couple of lines open. We will get to as many as we can before the top of the hour. Let's bring Joe up next in Spokane, Washington. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Hey, I took an early retirement on Social Security, or early benefit. So my mine's quite a bit less than my wife's, and she heard something on your show a few days ago that she thought said that her benefit could be increased because of the difference in our two benefits.
Unfortunately, no. Yours is lower than hers. She's already receiving the highest benefit that she's going to receive. So unfortunately, she was we got crossed in what we were saying. But no, she's not going to be able to increase her benefit in any way, shape, or form. If her benefit, now, how much is she receiving now, and what age did she start taking hers?
She started taking hers at 65.
And what is her benefit about?
$1,500.
And you started at 62-ish?
Yeah.
And how much is yours?
Well, mine's about $795.
Okay, that's the most that you're going to get out of either one of your Social Securities while you're both alive. There's unfortunately no games that we're going to be able to play at this point to take a spousal benefit and increase either one of your benefits. That's where we're at right now.
Is it because her benefit is higher? Is that what you're saying? That,
yes.
Yeah, because her benefit is higher, and it's his benefit is more than half of hers, so he can't increase his. Her benefit's already more than half of his. It's more than all of his, so she can't get a step up on hers either, so it's just not going to work. What we were probably talking about was somebody, a spouse, that had a very low benefit. Like if her benefit was $2,500 and your benefit was $500, the lower spouse could potentially increase up to a higher number. I remember talking about something like that a couple days ago. But once the benefits are closer than double each other, it's not going to work. You're not going to get any more.
Okay.
Sorry, Joe.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you asked, and sure, we'd be happy to clear that up. I remember we were talking about that strategy. Now, the reason it doesn't work in his case is because his wife's benefit isn't high enough, or his benefit
isn't more than double. Actually, isn't more than
It would have to be, let's see, his is what, 700?
795. And he took it at 62.
Yeah. And hers is 1,500. Half of hers is obviously more than what he's getting right now.
Right, but his full retirement age benefit was like $1,000.
Yeah.
So unless if her benefit was 2,500, he'd be able to pick up a couple $100 a month, because now her benefit is large enough, sufficiently large enough,
right,
that half of hers is more than what he's receiving or would have received at full retirement age.
Exactly. So he'd have to double whatever his benefit is, and then think that whatever she's getting would have to be more than that.
Well, first you'd have to make the adjustment for the fact that he took his early.
Yeah, so there was another, and he took it at 62, I guess. This is what he said.
So, unfortunately, yeah. Joe, it's not going to work.
Yeah, but anyway, hey, look, you might as well check. I'm really glad you called. All right, 877-PLANNER. I want to get some trivia in before the end of the day, before the end of the hour, rather. This one comes in from one of my favorite places. I don't know why, but they have great stuff. Employee Benefit Research Institute. That's EBRI. And their stuff is really quite accurate. 46%, according to EBRI, 46% of all American workers have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. And 29% of all American workers have less than $1,000 saved for retirement. Now, they can say this. They can say that all American workers, because
that
they
includes
have,
16, 17, 18-year-olds, too.
Yes, it does. And they have access to all this. Probably not 16. I'm guessing they're
21.
Checking. I'm guessing it's got to be at least 18-plus. Because if you're going to do 16-year-olds, you're going to do 8-year-olds, too. And I don't know how many of them have anything saved.
Are they working? Are they American? They did say all American workers.
They didn't say adults, at least not in the one that they sent me. I don't know, but that doesn't
workers.
Sound like something they would. That's almost skewing. That's almost using semantics to skew a result.
Using statistics to skew a result?
Yeah, to make it sound perhaps worse than it is.
The EBRI would never do that.
No, and I don't think they would. So I believe they're talking about adult American workers. They didn't say. But less than $10,000 saved for retirement, that's almost half. Half of American workers that have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. Now,
that's
you might
a problem.
Look at that. It is, but age makes a difference. If you are 20, 21, even 30, if you have less than 10 grand saved for retirement, I'm not that concerned. Are you? Maybe you are.
Well, I'd like to see them have more than that because it sure makes life easier for them later on.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. But there's a lot of American workers that are, you know, half of the American workers have got to be 40 plus.
Yeah, between 20 and 60, yes. You would figure 40 is the average age, the
so
median age.
So even if the entire universe of 20 to 40s had nothing that's really bringing the average down. But they should have more than $20,000 on average above that.
When you say save for retirement, the only thing that I could think that they're looking at are things like IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, actual retirement accounts.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily include maybe, you know, $300,000 sitting in an annuity somewhere.
Well, no, an annuity is considered a retirement account.
Oh, you're right. Sitting in a
brokerage account.
A brokerage account, right?
Yeah, but most people that have $300,000 in a brokerage account also have money in an IRA or other thing. It's only a small minority of people that have a lot of personal investments
and not in
retirement. It's the business owner that has been making a lot of money but doesn't want to put a retirement plan in because he'd have to include all of his employees, and he can't afford to do that.
So you're saying that somebody with a lot of money in a brokerage account
typically also has a decent amount of money in IRA 401k type money other retirement accounts.
Okay, well then now that stat is sounding a little more ominous to me.
It sounds horrible.
Well, especially considering that the large chunk of workers that they're talking about have to be in their, you know, 50s, I would think.
40s and 50s.
50s, 60s,
maybe even
perhaps.
60s.
Yeah, that could be a problem. All right, well, you know what? We're here to solve problems. If you need the brain trust off the air, some of your problems can be solved, perhaps, potentially, if you give Professor Aplomb a call or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Write that down. Talk to the advisors, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.